Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. More analysis of your Toronto Blue Jays and Major League Baseball. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Take that, Buck Showalter. Toronto Blue Jays swept the Baltimore Showalters yesterday.
Nice.
Raising their record to 9-7 in the year.
First place.
Yoo-hoo! Miles Wilner would say it's early.
No, but that's what you say. Until June
27th. It's Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. I'm Jeff Blair. That's Kevin Barker.
Yours truly.
Really doesn't matter to you because it's not in TV. It's just in the radio. To the left of your radio dial.
It's too bad, too, because your hair looks a lot better today. Just saying.
What, I didn't comb it with a rock like I did yesterday?
That's funny. You got to admit that's funny a little.
It's not that funny.
All right.
It's not that funny at all, dude. Getting washrooms done at our house. Getting washrooms redone. I'm washroom challenged right now.
They have washrooms here at work.
Well, anyhow.
What else you got for me?
Yeah, I just don't like the hair comment. I'm laboring. I'm laboring. The Blue Jays, as we said, 7-6 winners over the Baltimore Orioles last night. Great outing for Drew Hutchison. Perfect through five. Five-pitch first inning. Just every pitch Drew Hutchison needs to throw was thrown with authority. Great command inside. Once again, Russ Martin doing a terrific job getting Drew Hutchison through the game. Miguel Castro came in relief, gave up about a 7,335-foot home run, but hung on and got the save. And as I said, the Jays win 7-6. They sweep the Baltimore Orioles. And Kevin, a couple things to talk about out of this game. The first, the start by, before we deal with Miguel Castro, the start by Drew Hutchison. Pat Henkin has said that Drew Hutchison is capable of taking the next step up and becoming a truly elite pitcher.
Well, if anybody would know, it would be Pat. He knows a lot about baseball. But I think last night Drew showed you something, a weakness that the Orioles have. He started down, meaning he got strike one with pitches down, and then he put guys way up. And I just think that was last night, that was a theme throughout that entire lineup, is you can pitch the Orioles up. And, you know, in baseball, that's sort of a no-no because, you know, the more balls you throw up, the easier it is to elevate that baseball. But when you have a home-running team that you face, most of the time that means guys have a little bit longer swings. They have loops in their swings, and it's hard to get on top of the baseball up. Last night, Drew did a heck of a job throwing a lot of balls up, and he was throwing harder. He was, you know, running up there 95, saw a couple of 96s, and he was snapping that breaking ball off. You know, he was, I said earlier when we off air, we started, he had a five pitch first inning. I've never seen that from Drew. You know, he was pitching really well early, and he was putting guys away, and he went deep in the game. And John Gibbons said it the best. He said, that's exactly what we needed from our team. And that's what he got.
What do you think the upside is for Drew? Is Drew an ace?
Well, he is on this team. He is on this team. You sort of go on trial and error here. Who else would you pick? You have R.A. Dickey was that last year, and he's basically an innings eater. He's going to give you, you know, his starts have been a little bit better this year. His quality starts are better, but he often has that one or two bad inning where he gives up, you know, the crooked home run, the two and three run variety home run, which is hard to do that with an ace, because normally when you're the ace of a staff, you're facing the other team's ace. And, you know, runs are going to be hard to come by, and you have to put guys away and get deep in games. And right now Drew is the guy. I don't know until they go out of either and get another guy or call somebody up that can take over that spot. Right now it's Drew, and I think I think last night you may have seen him taking that next step. And again, we're going to say this all year, and we're going to keep saying it and saying it and saying it. Russell Martin is the key here. He is the whatever you want to call it, that drives the bus. Because it's a confidence thing. It's walking around the mound. It's not, you know, messing around. What do I throw here? When do I throw? How do I throw this guy? Just throw what Russell tells you to throw, and more times than not, you're going to get a lot of outs.
You know, Kevin, we asked callers in the first hour of my show. This is the first homestand for the Blue Jays. And we asked them which of the newcomers, and I gave them a choice of five, Osuna, Castro, Josh Donaldson, Russ Martin, and Devin Travis, which of the five had impressed them the most in this homestand? And a lot of people said Travis, but
that's the obvious.
I think we saw again last night, though, just how important Josh Donaldson is going to be. This is a team that has had inconsistent hitting from Edwin, inconsistent hitting from Jose Bautista when he was healthy, even. The bottom of the order's done well. The bottom of the order's hit well, especially early in the year. Donaldson scuffled a bit, but he gives this lineup something they haven't had. And beyond being just a great offensive player, he's a pretty big security blanket when you've got two guys in Edwin and Jose who do have a history of getting hurt. You've got a guy at third base who can hit in the middle of your order, and he plays every day.
Yeah, everything you just said. I think we may see some struggles just because of his approach at the plate and the leg kick. The leg kick is very hard to sustain an entire year. You see Bautista, he has up and downs, especially with the average. But right now you can't argue that he's the biggest piece on this team. He can stay healthy all year, keep playing the defense he's playing, and keep being a role model for the kids. I think that's the biggest thing is what he brings on. Off the field. We talk about that all the time, and you talk about chemistry, and you talk about, you know, being happy to come to the yard and play a baseball game. Well, people are going, well, it's a game. How are you not happy? Well, if you're the only happy guy and you have two or three guys that are not happy, it's not going to be a very good situation. This year's totally different, and Josh Donaldson seems, with Russell Martin, seems to be leading that pack just as – you know, this is the way we did it in Oakland. It's worked, and we didn't have the biggest names in Oakland, and we made the playoffs all the time. I think, you know, this team is – it's there. If they can get enough pitching and have enough in the back end of that bullpen, because that's going to be an important situation, an important part of this team is the back end of that bullpen. How do you stop games? How do you come in with that one-run lead – and get it done? That's the big, you know, I don't think it's been there yet. It hasn't been there a couple times in a row where that guy comes out of the bullpen and he stops the one-run games. He closes that game, giving John Gibbons the confidence to call on him, you know, every day or every other day, whatever the case may be. I think when they start doing that, this team's going to be, it's going to be there in September, and that's what we keep arguing. We keep saying you just want meaningful baseball in September. If they can do that and get a timely hit, play a little small ball, Jeff, as we always say on this show. Play some small ball. They do that and pitch it. Small balls. You know, it's going to work out for them.
Well, I mean, this last night, it's small ball certainly came
through.
Oh,
how about the bunt? Reyes bunted.
You never bunt in the first three innings of the game.
Okay. You do things to set the tone of the game. This is a different Blue Jays team. And when your biggest piece in Batista's not in the lineup, you have to do things. You get a lead early. You get Drew off to a good start by having the lead and go out and pitch aggressively. You saw the difference. You saw him pitching aggressively in the zone because I have the lead. It says something. This is what I'm saying. I think you're seeing John Gibbons manage the game different, and I think you're seeing veteran guys play the game differently than they played it last year because it's working. It will work if they do it the right way.
I'm going to tell you this. This is sacrilegious as far as I'm concerned, but I'm down with small ball. I'm a convert after last night.
You are?
I would bunt in the first inning.
No, I'm not going that far.
I would bunt in the second inning.
I'm saying if you're a starting pitcher.
I would have pitchers bunt the ball to the plate.
If you're a starting pitcher in the big leagues, is it easier to pitch with the lead or is it easier to pitch nothing or behind?
Last night made total sense. And the other thing, too, I think those of us who prefer home runs.
It's more fun to watch.
We're going to have to.
There.
Home runs are more fun.
Yeah.
But I got to say this, if this turf is going to play the way it's going to play and guys want to drop down a bunt and have the ball die the way it died last night, you have at it. have at it. I have, as much as I don't like it, it works.
Puts pressure on the defense. That's, you know, what you do. You put pressure on the defense.
As a great J.P. Ricciardi once told me, just because it didn't work doesn't mean it was the right decision. And just because it did work doesn't mean it was the right decision. No, just because it didn't work doesn't mean it was the wrong decision. Just because it did work, you know what I
There's
mean.
There's something in there.
It's like two somethings make a wrong.
Travis is correcting you as we're talking.
Anyhow, it's two somethings make a wrong. Exactly.
Oh, that's funny, Travis.
So, you know what? I'm going to say this right now. I'm going to remove the bunt moratorium.
I'm not saying
so
that. I'm
all
not
you
saying
can
you
stop
don't...
tweeting me every time somebody drops a bunt. Forget it.
I'm not saying that it's they're not going to need to hit the home run because they are of where they play at the Rogers Center. You have to score a lot of runs, and it's easier to score them when you hit the three run variety.
Yeah.
I'm just saying early in games, it sets tones, and especially your pitching staff.
Well, and
you have to go deeper in games to do that. You need the lead.
You need the lead.
Yeah.
And the other thing it did last night, too, and I was flipping around. I had the laptop on at the game, and I was flipping around and listening to the Baltimore broadcast as well as our broadcast. And the other thing it did, too, and Mike Bordick, pardon me, pointed this out. He actually said during the broadcast it would be a good time for a bunt because it was obvious to him that Chris Tillman was really uncomfortable in the mound. Chris Tillman was thrown from the stretch with nobody on. And Bordick said, you know what, considering the way this turf is playing right now, I would throw a bunt down.
Okay, I'll give an example. I think not yesterday, but the day before yesterday, Dalton Pompey came up in the eighth inning, I think. Darren O'Day was pitching.
Mm-hmm.
He laid down a bunt to try to get a hit. To me, that's not a very good situation to do that in because of Darren O'Day's track record. He wears out right-handers. Yeah. He's very hard to worry pitches. Kevin Pillar was on deck. That's one of those situations you like to see him try to bridge one, hit an extra base hit, watch Russell Martin run the bases. That's one of those situations you have to know what you're doing before you walk to the plate, know who's hitting behind you, know who's pitching. That I'm not in favor of. Last night, I'm in favor of that because you need the lead. You have a team on the ropes. That team's not playing very well. They're not doing the things they did last year, which is pitch the ball really well and catch it all the time. They're not doing those two things very well right now. You take advantage of that, put pressure on that defense, make them throw the ball around the yard. It works. It'll work a lot more times than not. And again, I say it, you do those things and you pitch the ball and you can keep that team from scoring late in games, Blue Jays are going to be right here.
Let's talk a bit before we're joined by Ben Wagner, the play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bisons. Kevin, let's talk a bit about Miguel Castro because you referred to, I mean, look, he's still what? His whip is like 1.13. He's 4 for 5 for in saves, as John Gibbons said last night. Hey, he got the job done.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is this. We're getting to the point now where teams are seeing him for the second time. We saw that with Baltimore. We saw him for the second time. We're going to see this weekend. Tampa's going to see him for the second time. I think we're beginning to get a sense of what this guy is about.
Mm-hmm.
Again, he's got a great arm. That pitch he threw last night for the home run, though, was right there.
Yep.
Not a lot of movement on it. I mean, I'll ask you, are the Jays playing with fire by keeping this guy as their closer
right
now?
I'm not saying that Castro is not has an unbelievable arm, and he may be really, really good. I just think with what you just said, second time, third time through, I think he has to make sure he pitches ahead so he can throw the little tight slider and throw his changeup. He's a better pitcher when he's ahead so he can use the changeup. His changeup, I think, is a better pitch than his slider.
Yes, it is.
Because now big leaguers have figured out his slider, he doesn't throw it for strikes all the time, and they're laying off it. They're not swinging at it. He's falling behind. He has to elevate fastballs, and when big league hitters look for the fastball, you can throw it 190 miles an hour. It doesn't matter. They're going to get the head out and do what you saw last night. I think he's good. He's pitching well, but he's going to have to make sure he pitches ahead. And I just – if you look right now through the first 16 games, I think that's what they've had, 16 games, what's the one thing you're worried about on this team? I ask you, what's the one thing you're worried about? Basically, it would be, I know what it is for me, the last three innings.
Yeah.
How do you get the last three innings of outs? How do you do that consistently? How are you going to do that dog days of August, middle of the summer, when people have seen you a lot of times? How are you going to do that when you don't have your good stuff? Do they have good enough arms in that bullpen to do that? I'm not I'm not convinced of that yet. Early, it looks good, but I'm going to have to see a couple of games where Castro comes in and closes games with a one-run lead, and then come and talk to me, and then I may have a different answer.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, look, nobody's saying it's a crisis situation or anything like that. The Jays are 9-7.
Right.
Could be a lot worse. But I just think that if you watch enough baseball, and it's great to want to, it's great to want to fall in love with Miguel Castro's arm. It's understandable that you do, but I think you do need to take a little step back. And as I said, let's see this weekend. Let's see what happens against Tampa.
Make changes while you're winning, not when you're losing. That makes your team better, and then they just consistently win all the time.
Yeah,
we're not saying he's not good, and they're not good in that bullpen. I'm just, you know, they're going to have to be a lot more consistent, I think, with strike throwing.
And I think that John Gibbons knows that as well. One of the reasons we keep reminding people that there is a possibility that Aaron Sanchez does go back into the bullpen is that John Gibbons and Alex Anthopoulos were pretty clear in spring training. This year is not about development. This year, and that doesn't mean you're going to shred a guy's arm, but this year is about winning. It's about putting the best team in the field. It's about having the best bullpen possible. And at the end of the day, if having Marco Estrada in the rotation and Aaron Sanchez in the bullpen is a net gain compared to Sanchez in the rotation and Estrada in the bullpen, then they're going to go with that. Same thing if the Scott Copeland, this pitcher at AAA Buffalo, if he pans out, if he continues to be the guy that the Jays executives are talking about, well, then maybe there's a chance there to, if he comes up, maybe that gives you the opportunity to move Aaron Sanchez to the bullpen. The bottom line is, whatever makes this team better, that's the key this year. Yep. Whatever makes this team better. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter if a guy needs an extra year in AA or whatever. That's not on the table for the Blue Jays. It's about doing the best they possibly can do to win right away. Ben Wagner is the play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bisons. The Buffalo Bisons pounded Lehigh Valley 11-1 yesterday. Chad Jenkins, a starting pitcher, 5 innings, 5 hits, 3 Ks, 2 walks, 89 pitches, 55 strikes. Chris Colabello, 2-for-5 with his 4th home run of the year. Ezekiel Carrera, 4-for-5 with a couple of RBIs, 2 runs scored. And Munenori Kawasaki,
your favorite.
Ugh. 3-for-4 with 3 runs scored.
Chad Jenkins must have figured out the cutter. Huh?
We'll find out. Ben Wagner, the play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bisons, joins us on Baseball Central. Good morning, Mr. Wagner.
Hey, Ben.
Good morning, Mr. Blair and Mr. Barker. How are you guys?
Good, thanks.
Chad Jenkins looked good last night?
Yeah, he did. Lehigh Valley helps a little bit because they've got some guys that are overmatched, I think, even for AAA, much like the Phillies are overmatched in the big leagues. But it helps a little bit, but Jenkins looks much better than what he did in his outing against Pawtucket. The sinker was working a lot better. He had a lot more run on the fastball, and he was a little bit more efficient in terms of his pitch count, too. He didn't fall behind, and that's really where he's gotten hurt in the first couple of starts. But he was much crisper on the mound last night.
Is he throwing his cutter?
Yeah, he's been mixing again. The problem is when he falls behind with it, then he's got to go back and really try to throw stuff over the plate, and that's where he got hurt. And, you know, he hasn't pitched like everybody else, right? He hasn't pitched in the greatest conditions. Temperatures were in the low 40s last night. There was a gale force wind blowing right in his face. It was tough going early in that ball game, but, you know, he got around a couple of early hits, left some runners in scoring position, got ground balls when he needed to, and you can tell that he's working on the cutter still. He's making sure that he finds that sinker and keeping balls on the ground. But it's a work in progress, and he knows that it's not only the stuff coming out of his hand. He's trying to get his body back into being in shape for a starter and going through the rigor. So he's changing his entire regimen of what he does in the days in between and leading up to the start. So he's revamping himself really from on-field play to even the stuff that's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, Ben, Randy Wolf's 3-0 with a 2.25 ERA in 16 innings. But the league's hitting .311. Are those numbers legit, or does he look good enough to we expect seeing him in Toronto soon?
Well, I thought over the first couple of outings, Jeff Francis was ahead of where Randy was. First two starts, he went through 5 innings, nothing is over dominant. I mean, dominant for him. His last start, he queued up one more frame. He's getting guys out because he goes out to the mound. He's got a plan. He's moving it in. He's moving it out. He's moving it up and down, and he's changing speeds to keep guys off balance. I think for Randy, it's a little bit more of a process only to get his arm back in shape. He's still on a pretty limited pitch count. I think it was around 80, 85 his last time out. So as it elevates, I think he's going to get a little bit more on the leash. And no doubt, he's an option. Mm-hmm. And they're watching him very closely to make sure mechanically he's sound. Of course, now 2 years fully removed from the second Tommy John surgery, he's going to make sure that his body's ready to go. But he is definitely on the radar for depth.
Yeah, Ben, is the velocity there with the fastball? Because he's a fastball changeup guy, and you obviously need the variance there. Is the velocity there?
The velocity is in the upper 80s consistently. We've seen it hover between 87 and 89. I think I saw in Pawtucket, the one time he hit 91, which is pretty surprising. But we have seen not – but the velocity that is there, I guess, in terms of changing from fastball speed even to the changeup, that's where you see the big difference. So that's what's keeping guys definitely off balance, mm-hmm. and that's where he's been able to get guys off balance. And, yeah, he hit 313 off of him, and that's not a great number, but it's really early in the season, and it's starting to come down. Mm-hmm. I think he's doing what he wants to do. Let me put it that way. He's going out on the mound and talking with him. It sounds like he's executing pitches, and he's feeling good about where he's executing pitches and how it feels coming out of his hand.
In conversation with Ben Wagner, play-by-play voice, the Buffalo Bisons, who are, of course, the AAA affiliate of the Toronto Blue Jays. All right, Ben, I need you to give me a scouting report on Scott Copeland, and why does John Gibbons keep mentioning his name? Why do other people around this team keep mentioning his name as a guy who may, in fact, be here sooner as opposed to later?
Well, I think you look at a guy that has placed himself as a 27-year-old on a prospect radar, four pitches that he pounds the strike zone with. And not only that, he induces tons of ground balls, and he's proven to be durable. Even in Buffalo, six out of his seven starts, he goes out, he chews through innings, and he's allowed one run or less. That's impressive stuff. And he's not throwing up eye-popping strikeout numbers. He's not walking guys and hurting himself. He goes out, he wants to pitch to contact, use the defense behind him, and when you've got Ryan Goins and Jonathan Diaz playing behind you, you want those guys to be active and involved. So they vacuum up a ton of ground balls. And I asked Josh Tolley, I said, what makes him different? Why does he now have stuff that can play in the big leagues? And he said it's the four pitches that he can throw for strikes, but it's when he chooses to call for those four pitches. And maybe the greatest indicator will be if he gets a chance to go to the big leagues, working with Russell Martin. Maybe even see Scott Copeland pitch backwards a little bit so mm-hmm. he can flip a curveball in a 2-0 count and keep guys even more off balance to use it to his advantage.
Yeah, Ben, question marks in Toronto are obviously bullpen. Is there any guy in Buffalo that stands out to you in that bullpen there that we may see sooner than later in Toronto?
I'd go right away to Bo Schultz. Mm-hmm. I mean, high-octane velocity. He's gone out 3-for-3 and save opportunities with the Bison. His first outing was a little rusty. He hadn't pitched in almost 7 days. So that was you kind of write that one off. And the schedule's been so chaotic with Buffalo and the weather issues. But Bo Schultz is somebody that I would go to right away. Mid to upper 90s in velocity. Good run on the slider. Powerful, powerful stuff.
Hmm. And he was a guy I know that in spring training caught the attention of John Gibbons and Pete Walker specifically for that reason. I mean, Pete Walker called him, he's a big arm is how he described him. He could be a Neil Wagner type of guy.
Yeah, you can definitely see that. And guys that already are in the organization, like Ryan Tepera, he's mm-hmm. somebody that's up there. Gregory Infante didn't have his best outing last night, but he's another guy that can throw mid to upper 90s. Had a small cup of coffee a few years ago with the Chicago White Sox, was a little banged up last year, so never really placed himself in the forefront of the minds of the brass in Toronto. But he's definitely somebody that could get a look too. So I think those are really three solid options that Blue Jay fans haven't heard a lot of yet. And, of course, Steve Delabar is down here as mm-hmm. well. He's made four outings and only allowed two hits. And he's, once again, got good velocity on the fastball. We've seen a lot of the slider from Steve Delabar, and he feels very comfortable of where he's at right now.
How has this splitter been? Because I know the one thing that the Jays said here when they sent him down is they wanted to see him throw it with a little more consistency. And I mean, I got to tell you the truth. I at spring training this year, at times, I thought he was really good. He had a couple of outings where it was so-so. But when it was so-so, it was simply the splitter. It wasn't the velocity. Velocity was fine. It was just the splitter just hung.
Yeah, Jeff, that's what burned him last year, even at AAA. It was floating too high in the zone, and it got crushed when it was sitting up there. It's been better this year. It's been more down in the zone. He's not burying it. He's never done that.
Mm-hmm.
But the splitter, you know, has got a little bit more bite on it, kind of tumbles off the table. It looked really good in his first outing. His, I think, two outings ago where he gave up a couple of hits, I believe they were both on the splitters that weren't exactly high in the zone, but guys just topped him and then kind of snuck him through as seeing high singles. And then his last time out, he was dominant. Faced three batters and just mowed right through them. It was nine pitches. All eight out of the nine pitches were right in the strike zone. And that was probably his best performance I've seen from him in the year plus that he's been in Buffalo.
Great stuff as always, Ben. We'll look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks a lot, Ben.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
It's Ben Wagner, the play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bisons, does a terrific job. And again, I keep talking up the Bisons. You've got to get down to Buffalo to see a game. As a matter of fact, while the Jays are on the road, why not go down to Buffalo, watch some AAA baseball? Monday to Thursday, they'll play Norfolk, and the Canadian dollar will be accepted at par in stadium. That's $20 or less denominations all series. So in other words, you got a 10, you're going to get $10 worth of product, regardless of whether it's Canadian or American dollar. And next Friday to Sunday, Kevin Barker Day. Did you know that?
They're
calling Saturday Kevin Barker
Day. That's awesome.
May 1st to 3rd, Louisville's in town.
Yes.
Also known as the team that Barker built. You should go down and see them.
I'm definitely going to go. It's a great park.
Yeah, it is. It's
I used to love playing
cool
there.
Park. And so Kevin Barker there might be down there. They might get you to throw at the first pitch.
It's really cold there. I just remember that. It's one of the coldest places ever played.
It is cold. It is cold.
Yeah.
So, interesting take from Ben Wagner. I mean, look, Scott Copeland, 6'3", 215-pound, former draft pick of the Baltimore Orioles. You know, just looking at his record, last year he pitched at two levels for the Jays. It was 11-9, had a whip of 1.302, 105 strikeouts, 55 walks. Mm-hmm. That's at both AA and AAA. And yeah, he pitched in winter ball, pitched in the Dominican League, had a good winter ball campaign in the Dominican League. Seven games, a 1.23 ERA, 1.295 WHIP. He had 21 strikeouts and 12 walks in 29 in the third inning. So
I'll say this: I think the weather, you know, it may be a little. I don't think you're going to see these guys as soon as we would think, just because of the weather. Mm-hmm. We just mentioned that. When you play in the north and closer to New York and those places, it's super cold, and hitters just don't like those things. I'm not saying these guys don't have great stuff, but the numbers are going to be a little bit more inflated the first month and a half of the season than it will when it gets really hot in the summertime. Then you're going to get to see how good stuff, you know, how good guys are and how good their stuff is. So it's fun to call Ben and hear these things, but I think we should give it a little bit more time
before we get
too excited, you know?
For sure. And I know that the Blue Jays have talked about Scott Copeland's being a ground ball machine, but they've also said the same thing. They want to see a bit more. But, I mean, the fact is the guy does throw four pitches.
But Bo Schultz is the guy that throws super hard. Yeah. If you throw super hard, it really doesn't matter where you play.
No, and as I said, he's a guy that in spring training, the Jays brass were really high on.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell's up with the Kansas City Royals? Yordano Ventura started another brawl last night. Five players ejected. 25 players ejected in the major league so far this year. 10 last year at this time. Andy McCulloch covers the Royals for the Kansas City Star, and Andy McCulloch will join Baseball Central when we return on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we are back. Got to talk about hit by pitches as we wait Andy McCulloch of the Kansas City Star. Kansas City Royals started another dugout-clearing brawl yesterday. Yordano Ventura getting it going.
But, can't blame the team, can you?
No.
Well, I mean, you can't.
So this kind of got us wondering about hit batters and such. And, we went back and looked and tried to find a team that, you know, had the major league record for hit batters. And it turns out that it's the 1899 Cleveland Spiders. Yet another major league team you didn't play for.
That's funny.
Sorry. I had to take all your grief off the air. But
so you say it on the air about me. That's unbelievable. Right, unbelievable.
That Cleveland Spiders team had how many hit batters here? I can't do the math.
109.
Their pitching staff hit 109. Oh. The pitching staff included Crazy Schmidt.
That's made up.
Harry Cauliflower. That is not made
That's
up.
That's a real name right there.
Okay. All right. I know they had a difficult time keeping stats. Frank Bates had 105 walks and 13 strikeouts. 105 walks and 13 strikeouts.
That could totally happen. That could totally happen.
Actually, I guess the way the game is played back then. Anyhow, 105 walks and 13 strikeouts. His whip was 2.248. But anyhow, yeah, they hit, they hit a lot of batters.
Everybody.
Jim Huey hit 22 batters. Charlie Knepper hit 15. Frank Bates hit 23. Crazy Schmidt hit 14. Harry Cauliflower hit 11. Willie Sudoff was kind of a wimp. He only hit 10. But it was a pretty good team. They had some interesting players. They had Sport McAllister in their team, in the bullpen.
Mm.
And your favorite player of all time, Highball Wilson. Highball Wilson hit... None of the relievers. The relievers were a model of control. But in case you're interested, that Cleveland Spiders team, 527 walks. And 215 strikeouts. So, yeah, I know the rules were different and everything like that. But there you go. So the next time anybody talks to you about a pitching staff throwing at guys, drop the name Highball Wilson, Crazy Schmidt, and Harry Cauliflower on them. And, again, Frank Bates had 105 walks that year. Anyhow, we started thinking about hit batters and such after watching the Kansas City Royals last night. I don't know what the Royals have done to get everybody mad at them, but Yordano Ventura last night – sparking another dugout clearing incident. Andy McCullough covers the Royals for the Kansas City Star. And I'm sure, Andy, and thank you for joining us in Baseball Central, Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. The first thing I thought of as an old sports writer is that's got to play hell with your deadlines.
You know, it was one of the few times I was actually okay with the game going extra innings because – you know, this fight happens in the seventh inning, and I was just like, you're kind of in one of the worst spots up in the press box. So I was glad to have a couple innings to kind of sort out just what the heck happened in the fight before I went downstairs.
What's going on with Kansas City?
You know, I think you've seen, I mean, there's a lot of factors at play. I think the Royals and Jeff Samardzija do not get along. And, you know, several Royals mentioned that Samardzija was barking at them from the White Sox dugout for much of the game last night. And that sort of escalated the tension. But, you know, honestly, what happened last night was Adam Eaton, may have said something to Yordano Ventura as he ran down to first base. Ventura definitely said something in response. And, you know, it's the third time now Ventura has sort of ended his outing, you know, kind of ending up in some sort of spat, you know, with an opposing player. And it's problematic, you know, because it's not going to get him the benefit of the doubt with umpires. It causes him to have something of a reputation that, you know, might be a little undeserved as a hothead. I don't think he's necessarily a guy who can't control his temper all the time, but you know, it's been striking just to see the way he's kind of been a little bit out of control these last three outings, and that's a real issue for the team going forward.
Now, Andy, in fairness to the Royals, they're getting a lot of guys hit.
Sure, yeah, but you know, the guys. I mean, I feel like last night is a little bit different than what was going on with Oakland. I feel like You know, in Oakland, they felt like Scott Kazmir on that Sunday afternoon hit Lorenzo Cain on purpose. And so that was why Kelvin Herrera answered. In this case, it's, you know, Eaton saying something, you know, at Ventura, and Ventura needs to have the presence of mind to not, you know, shout F you at him as he throws the ball. You know, he just has to just get the out and go into the dugout and just let it go. I mean, you have to, at some point, you know, turn the other cheek, you know, even if you're being provoked, because, you know, you're not going to come out looking like the good guys in this. And so, yeah, they've been getting hit a lot. But honestly, all that does is really help their own base percentage. I mean, it's kind of a good thing, you know, as long as everyone's staying healthy.
Yeah, Andy, what is this doing to the clubhouse? I know I used to play, and basically it's going to get to where every time Ventura is pitching, their entire team's going, oh, no, here we go again. With a team that relies a lot on chemistry and a lot on everybody going out to eat, and that's how they win games, just being together, is this going to do anything to that, or is this going to make them a worse clubhouse? Is it going to make it harder? What's this going to do to them?
Well, it hasn't, you know, it hasn't had any real tangible effect yet. And so, you know, it's hard to say what, you know, anything, you know, what it would do to them. It's just, I'm just kind of speculating, you know, but obviously last night was kind of the first time you heard, you know, a few players, you know, all just kind of off the record and, you know, not really, for, you know, not really wanting it to be put out there, but, you know, they understood that maybe Ventura was over the line, you know, that was kind of one of the first times that you heard that sort of undercurrent of, you know, players admitting that, you know, Ventura really, you know, probably overstepped his boundaries there. And so it's something that'll correct itself, you know, in with a team that has good chemistry and has a good clubhouse. And that's something, you know, the Royals, you know, have definitely had before in the past, is, you know, they are a very, very tight-knit bunch, and, you know, they care about each other and they play hard for one another. And, you know, I suspect it's the sort of thing they'll try and take care of soon.
Andy, listen, it was great of you to join us today. Thanks so much. It's certainly, it's been a fun early season for the Royals, and we'll keep an eye on this.
Thanks a lot, Andy.
Yeah, hasn't been boring. Have a good one, guys.
Take care. That's Andy McCulloch. He covers the Kansas City Royals for the Kansas City Star. Again, Yordano Ventura last night hit Adam Eaton. Sorry, didn't hit Adam Eaton. Adam Eaton hit a ball back to him. Ventura picked it up, and the two of them jawed on the way down to first base, and that led to the dugouts clearing. I'm trying to remember who was the guy in the minors a couple of years ago, a pitcher who threw a pitch at a guy, knocked him down, then charged the mound while the hitter was trying to get up. Some guy in the minors. What did I say before the start of the Orioles series, Kevin? I can't remember if I said it or I wrote it. No, you know what it was? It was in my Monday column. I said, I am just going to go out on a limb here and say that the Baltimore Orioles were going to become the first team to launch a formal complaint about the artificial turf at the Rogers Center.
Right.
Because I know what Buck Showalter's like. This from Eduardo Encina, who covers the Royals for the Orioles, sorry, for the Baltimore Sun, from his Inside the Orioles blog. Not an excuse for sweep, but Orioles left Toronto thinking new Rogers Center turf is a major problem. Too spongy, slow, and lots of untrue hops. In fact, there was consideration by the Orioles of not playing Tuesday night, especially after Jimmy Paredes was hurt on a bad hop. That was in batting practice. He took a And I saw the play. I mean, it was just a regular bouncer, and it took a weird bounce and caught him around the throat area. And according to Eduardo Encina, the O's have contacted Major League Baseball about the artificial turf. Do I know my jerks or do I know my jerks?
You called it.
I know my jackoffs pretty well. Buck Showalter. Well, I mean, what are you going to call? I told you the guy was going to file a complaint. No, it's so predictable.
Right.
You know? Buck Showalter, the best line I've heard about a manager was a friend of mine, Tom Keegan, who used to hate Bobby Valentine. And we had one of the best leads of all time in the New York Post one day when he said, if Bobby Valentine knew there were going to be days like today, he never would have invented the game of baseball. Because Bobby Valentine thought he invented baseball.
Right.
That's what Buck Showalter
thinks. That.
Anyhow, so there you go. The Baltimore Orioles apparently thought about not playing Tuesday's game at the Rogers Center because of the artificial turf. I told you.
So why did they play?
I told you that was going to happen.
What does this mean? Question. Does this mean anything?
It says they've contacted Major League Baseball. Now, let's see if Major League Baseball forces the Jays to do something about the turf. Again, the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred, was at the first home game.
Right.
Helped throw out the first pitch. So just throwing that out there that, yes, indeed, the Baltimore Orioles and Buck Showalter have apparently contacted Major League Baseball about the state of the turf at the Rogers Center. And according to Eduardo Encina, terrific beat writer for the Baltimore Sun, on his blog today, the Orioles actually thought about not playing on Tuesday, about boycotting Tuesday's game. And it's interesting, yesterday in his pregame session, Buck Showalter, in discussing an injury to Ryan LaVarnway, out of nowhere, just kind of took a shot at the turf.
Right.
And so there you go, Buck Showalter, I don't say public enemy number one, but going out of his way to make friends in Toronto. And, well, you know what? Someone was going to, I thought about this at the homestand. Someone was going to, at the start of the homestand, somebody was going to file a complaint.
Yeah, if not him, it would be somebody.
Yeah, so there you go. And as I said, we will keep on top of that. You know what it's time for?
What's that?
Yes.
Batter up! It's time for Barker's Three Strikes!
Time for us to go get us some fish, Kevin Barker.
Yes. I'm a meat and potatoes guy myself.
That's what I've been told.
Thank you.
That's what I've been told.
That's unbelievable.
Tell me something I would not have believed if you had said it to me on opening day.
That the Mets franchise right now have won 11 games in a row. They tied a franchise record yesterday for winning 11 games in a row. I bet you're the only guy in baseball that would have said that in the offseason before the season started, right? Because you are the smartest guy in baseball.
No chance.
Right now, they have the best record in baseball for that reason.
Strike one!
I never would have thought of that. Although I did say that Terry Collins would either be manager of the year or be the first manager fired, which is, I guess that counts. I guess that counts for something. Yeah.
Nice.
You know, there have been a lot of good pitching performances to start the year, a lot of good pitchers to start the year. I think most of them have been guys we'd expect, right?
Yeah, but there's a couple of guys that you would never expect, and I ask you this off air, and you still don't know the answer to it, but
Colin McHugh is the answer.
No way that's right. The two guys that have the most wins in baseball and lead an ERA in baseball, and they're not the same person. Can you name one of them?
Colin McHugh.
Not right. First guy leading an ERA is Shane Green of the Detroit Tigers at .39, only giving up one Ernie in 23 innings. And the next guy is my favorite Dominican, Bartolo Colon, is 4-0 with a 2.77. Fastest guy in baseball for that reason.
Strike two!
Tell me something you know about Bartolo Colon.
Ha!
You can't do that,
awesome.
Can you? Not in the air.
He's fast.
I think I know this one, but Major League Baseball rookies leading in batting average, RBI, home run, and extra base.
Who is that? Can you say it? I'll give you two reasons, two people it's not. Jock Peterson and Chris Bryant. Can you name the guy that...
Guys that a lot of people thought would be Rookie of the Year candidates. I'm going to say Devin Travis.
Man, you are the smartest guy in baseball.
It is
your Toronto Blue Jay, Devin Travis, who is hitting .385 with four homers, 15 ribbies.
I am smart.
And nine extra base hits for that reason.
Strike three, you're out.
And guess what? We are out.
Nice.
What a great segue. We are out for Ben Wagner, Andy McCulloch, the hipster beat writer, the Kansas City Star, and Kevin Barker. I'm Jeff Blair saying thanks for joining us in Baseball Central. Hockey Central at noon is next. Enjoy the hockey. Enjoy the baseball through the weekend. We'll be back on Monday. Don't forget the Jeff Blair Show, 9 to 11 as well. Bye-bye.